Welcome to our AJAG PD Pod, the place for discussion, debate, and learning about all things accounting. Our hosts, Ivan Tabak, Jonathan Tucker, are CPAs that have been in practice for more than 3 decades. Together, they bring varying experience and viewpoints to the table, not to mention a little humor, too. Join us as we talk through current issues and hot topics, tap into expert guest insights, and enjoy the odd walk down AJAG memory lane. Before we begin today's podcast, please note, although the educational material within the podcast has been carefully prepared, none of the persons involved in the preparation of the material accepts any legal responsibility for its contents or for any consequences arising from its use. As well, the podcast material and the references contained therein may reflect laws and practices that are subject to change. Advice regarding a particular fact or situation should always be reviewed by a qualified professional. This podcast is produced and distributed by AJAG Professional Development. For more information about AJAG or any of its offerings, please visit ajag.ca.
Hi, and welcome to AJAG PD Pod Episode 11. I'm Ivan Tabak.
And I'm Jonathan Tucker.
And today we'd like to welcome Kim Tabak. Kim, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your business?
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me, first of all. I'm so excited. You guys have the most incredible podcast. I've been listening. I'm an avid listener, big fan.
I hope I'm going to get some tips today.
Well, we'll see about that.
Okay. Very good.
So I'm Kim Tabak. I've been in human resources my entire career, mostly working in very large organizations. And then several years ago, I went out to a startup. And from there, I have since been out on my own. I'm going into my third financial year of business as an independent contract consultant and advisor. I also work as an executive in residence at Mars with some of Canada's most promising startups.
So what are some of the biggest misconceptions around HR? You must hear a lot.
So HR is not the party planner. HR is not the job for your niece or your cousin or your wife or your receptionist. It's actually a value-added profession. And so when we talk about HR, a lot of people will speak about it as a call center. But truly, HR could really be the key to energizing your organization, building culture, and really enabling performance.
And what are some of the biggest HR challenges that you find yourself facing in the clients that you have?
Yeah, so some of the things, you know, especially working with small and medium-sized companies who are either going through some kind of transformation or have massive growth going on, it's all about culture and it's about being able to scale culture. And so founders in very small organizations or CEOs who start their own business and they're like 8 to 10 people and they feel really connected with each other, but then you've got to multiply that out and they become 50 people. And then the CEO doesn't know everybody's name anymore. And then employees don't know each other anymore. And now, especially post-COVID, with everybody working from all over the world, connection is even more difficult to create. And then culture, of course, is you know, at risk.
So how do you work around a virtual environment when people have been working together in the past or during the pandemic, now new people are added? How do you work in a virtual environment as an HR professional?
So first thing I wanted to talk about also, Jonathan, is that, you know, younger people coming into the workforce need to be close to their manager or their leadership team. And so in order to see them perform, and studies have shown this and proven this, that the virtual environment and working from home obviously saves everybody the commute and saves, you know, on parking and gas. Right. And for a lot of employees, that's a huge benefit. But for younger employees just coming into the workforce, it's less of a benefit. They're coming for a social experience. They're coming to learn. And when they're sitting at home in their apartment with their roommate who they may or may not like, in, you know, 800 square feet, they're really challenged. They're challenged to, again, like going back to that, you know, idea of culture and connection and being the power of really successful organizations. They're having a really hard time connecting, but also they're not getting the kind of coaching and mentorship that they need.
Is this unique to that generation or is that across the board, would you say?
I'd say it's fairly unique to the generation, not because of the generation, but because they're newer to the workforce. Now, we could talk about generations and the differences in generations, because that's also a huge challenge within the workforce right now.
Right.
So looking across especially larger organizations, you've got, you know, a ton of people looking to retire within the next 5 or 10 years. The baby boomers are on their way out. You've got Generation X, that's a pretty small generation in the workforce. And then you have the two younger generations coming up that nobody seems to know how to engage with them and how to get the best from them.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of talking about this topic. I'm super passionate about it.
Yeah.
But it is one of the challenges right now in the workplace.
We used to use some co-op students from one of the local universities. We did that for maybe 10 years. And then COVID came along. And I'd say 2 years ago, we said we can't do this anymore because they had not developed. And so they couldn't make decisions. And it wasn't because they weren't smart. It was just because the impact that no socialization, no work experience had on them. So we haven't worked with co-ops since, just because as an employer, we just thought we ended up doing the work over ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Well, and that's not unique. I mean, even in high tech, you find that some of those co-op engineers, there's a lot less opportunities for them now, mostly because organizations are super tight. It's been an unpredictable market conditions.
Yeah.
And having co-ops takes work.
Yeah.
And it takes you away from the actual work that you're supposed to be delivering on in order to help to train.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because we really need to be thinking about the next generation and how it is that we're going to hand off to them.
Yeah.
And they're not getting the love that they need.
Yeah. And they're working in isolation. I had a client the other day who was telling me about their daughter who for the last 3 years has worked for a municipality. And it's been at home, and he said she's really suffering in terms of mental health. So she's now, you know, what I would have thought would have been a good job, she's looking elsewhere. So, you know, she's giving up a pension and all of those things, and she's saying, this is not for me. I can't stay at home in my parents' basement working here. So anyway.
That's a pretty typical situation. And so when I'm working with clients, one of the things that's very important is to acknowledge who are you and what is the work that we offer and what is the experience? Because you might be an exceptional employer, but you're not for everybody and everybody's not for you. And so one of the things I do with my clients and one of the engagements that I have quite a bit is really determining what is that talent value proposition? What would the ideal employee look like here? And the truth is, in that municipality where everything is virtual, someone like you or I or Ivan, who might really love the idea of not having to go into the office every day, because we've already earned our stripes.
Right.
We've already have the social connections. We already have the network. We know how to do the job.
Right.
We don't need to physically be there in order to give our best work.
Right.
But that's not a job for everybody.
Right. You said an exceptional employer. Is there such a thing? And what makes an exceptional employer?
I think what makes an exceptional employer is an employer who actually knows what makes them exceptional.
Wow.
And so regardless of, you know, what you or I might think about an employer or an employment situation, it's about going out and being really honest about it. And so working in, you know, the big four consulting firms is not for everyone. Are they an exceptional employer? Well, they are for somebody who is looking to have a lot of mentorship and career development.
Right.
And they are if they're looking for a variety of work and the opportunity to do some travel.
Right.
But for somebody who is less inclined to do that kind of work, wants to work less hours,
right,
wants to be closer to home, maybe has a young family,
right,
they're not an exceptional employer.
Right.
So I think it's like a two-sided coin. It's about employers really understanding what makes them exceptional and being honest about it.
Right.
And it's about employees understanding really what kind of environment they are going to thrive in.
But there is a huge disconnect here because, you know, in a profession where we're used to long hours, getting that work done no matter what, and then a young person comes along and is talking about work-life balance, how do you navigate that?
So work-life balance was actually coined by Generation X. Which is really interesting.
Why?
And it was coined by Generation X because the generation before them had none. They didn't see their parents. We were the latchkey kids, right? We were like basically raising ourselves right. because the generation before us, the baby boomers, were constantly at work and they were really focused on getting out of the poverty that their families maybe had.
Right. Right.
And so we have spent a lot of time with our children.
Right.
And we spent a lot of time with our children, raising our families, and we wanted to be the kinds of parents that our parents maybe weren't with us.
Right.
And so we created the problem, first of all.
Yeah.
The second thing that I would say is that they actually do things smarter, better, and faster.
Really?
They have access to greater technology.
They don't have experience? They don't have life experience?
No, they don't have life experience, yeah. but they do know about technology. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. do. They have seen it, or they understand how things fit together in a way that is different than the way that we think about traditional problems. Mm. They're highly innovative. Mm. And so I think the magic...
But they're innovative in their area.
Correct.
Which is, you know, an environment that's a virtual environment, but not necessarily with a lot of what we'd call life skills.
Yeah,
life skills.
It's very, very narrow.
It's very narrow. Yeah, absolutely.
But imagine an opportunity to mentor and to reverse mentor. Mm-hmm. So you're mentoring mm-hmm. them and teaching them about mm-hmm. traditional accounting.
Yeah.
And they're spending some time teaching you about some of the technology and some of the ways that they could do things faster, smarter, and better. I mean, it's interesting because one of the things that we need to make sure of is that regardless of how we leverage technology, we always need to ask, does this make sense?
Yeah.
They're not great at that, right? So they'll put something into a spreadsheet, they'll do it with AI, they'll use ChatGPT, but it's the review and the knowledge to know, is this going to work? Does this make sense?
Yeah.
Is it going to be something I'm proud to present to a client because I have experience with this client and I understand previously what's worked in the past?
Right.
And that's where we come in. And so I really see it as a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. So reverse mentoring.
Reverse mentoring.
I've never heard that term.
Yes.
And because that is what happens.
That's right.
Right.
But you got to be open to it.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stereotypes currently out there about, you know, kind of the lazy generation, the technology enabled, these are the kids that like, you know, the gamers.
Right.
We've given them a bad rap and we're not actually thinking about what could they bring to us and how can they help us to leverage, you know, better solutions.
But they don't have the same values that we have either in terms of, and I don't, when I use values, I'm talking about, listen, I need you to get this job done no matter what because the client needs it today. That there's a disconnect there, I find, with some of the younger people I'm working with. They'll leave it with me, and then I end up having to finish it.
So let's also remember, everybody comes to work wanting to do their best job. Mm. Nobody comes to work and says, I'm gonna be a failure today, or I'm going to disappoint someone today. Mm. So setting clear expectations when you're hiring someone is really important. And like I said before, you know, knowing who you are. We're an organization where we work long hours. Okay. You know, in tax season, we might work really, really late at night.
Yeah.
Is that okay for you? But also, understanding that if you want to attract this generation and if you want younger people to think about you as a great employer, you might say, and in the summertime when it's less busy, we have a lot of flexibility.
Right, right.
And so thinking about it that way.
Okay.
So we're talking big picture here and theory here.
For sure.
But I think a lot of people watching, and I'm included, I would like to get down to like the nitty gritty. So I have an organization. I need some HR work. I need help hiring, firing, evaluating, setting policies, etc. And I call you. So what's the process? How do we start?
So for me, it's really important to understand who you are, what you represent, what are you doing, why is what you're doing something that employees could become really passionate about.
I think we'd need help understanding that from you as well.
Right.
Probably because, you know, I don't know about you, but I know I just do what I have to do and I don't even think about, you know, that kind of thing.
We're different in terms of our practices, right? You're very much hands on. I'm more of a delegator. And so, you know, that's a different style as well. So
what's interesting is the way that you would describe your business might be very different than the way your employees would describe your business. Mm. And so I speak to both. Mm. I will
Speak to both.
both
us, or
both the leaders within the organization and the employees. Yeah. So in a large organization, that would be, you know, kind of a much larger process. It's not a one-on-one conversation, but I facilitate discussions through whether it's focus groups or surveys. And what I love is bringing back the data to the founders or the CEOs and saying, so you have defined your culture or the way that you work like this, but guess what? The people who determine your culture, the people who actually drive the, am I going to be an ambassador of this organization and help other people understand why they should join, they describe it differently. And imagine a world where an organization is described by employees as, we work really long hours. I work really, really hard, but I'm learning a lot. There are a ton of employees who would be prepared to work really long hours. They work really hard if they could learn a lot. And they might see this as a great stepping point into, you know, another organization one day. So there is no bad when you describe who you are. And once we figure out what that looks like, and it is a balance between, you know, your version of where it is that you would like to be and what is actually being said by employees. And we would, you know, first and foremost, we also need to think about, there are legislative environments that we need to manage within. And so small employers are not necessarily thinking about that, but there are certain policies that you need to have in place. There's certain training that you need to have in place as an employer. And that's like not sexy work and it's not fun work. But when you wrap it into policies and procedures that align to your goals and to your culture, it's not about kind of your culture is written on the wall on a poster. It's that employees are experiencing it every day. I'll give you an example. I worked for an organization where they were discussing how they were going to manage their maternity leave. Maternity leave is very expensive for some employers. Particularly, they had employees in Canada and the U.S. So we know in Canada that there's some benefits available to people who are going on a maternity leave or a parental leave. And in the U.S., there are not the same benefits in every single state. How are we going to manage that? Were we okay with the fact that the expectations of employees in Canada are going to be different than the U.S.? We went back to the values and we said, well, as an organization who believes in the health and welfare of employees and helping them to define their life as a healthy life, what would we do? And the decision was really clear. We were going to provide benefits to employees in Canada and the U.S. equivalently. And that actually meant that we were paying mat leave from $1 in the U.S. versus in Canada, it was just a top up. But that to me is why you always start there. And there is not a time that is too early to start. So organizations who start early in defining who they want to be, what they want to represent, how it is that they work with employees, will hire people that are going to be aligned to that vision and to those values, will manage them in those ways. And it's really easy to build benefits, compensation programs, performance reviews around that.
Is there a greater need for that now? Like, why would I worry about that? Why is that important to me as an employer?
Which part?
Going through the whole HR exercise and saying, okay, how are we going to deal with employee? Why do I care about that? I've got work, I've got a job, they get paid well. Why do I care?
So first of all, we live in an environment where everybody knows, you know, kind of what the compliance, the bare necessities of what it is that their employer needs to provide to them. And here in Canada, it's defined very, very clearly by employment standards in each province. You know, what time off looks like, what my vacation policy needs to be. And that's like the bare standard. But it's a really competitive environment right now. And you're competing for talent in the open market where other folks are also competing for the same talent. How do you want to differentiate yourself? And not only that, not only about competing, but again, going back to, don't you want to work with employees who come here and want to work the way you want to work? So defining that, like going out and saying, well, this person's great. I think they have the perfect skills. Guess what? There's a lot of people who have the perfect skills, but some people might be better suited to a 9-to-5 environment. Some people might be better suited to a very large firm where there's much more mentorship.
Right.
I would assume that working here in a smaller firm, it's much more, you know, independent work, a lot of figure it out.
Right.
Those are all skills.
And sharing tasks, right?
Sharing
it's
tasks.
Not defined.
Collaboration,
yeah.
Taking initiative.
Yeah.
Those are skills that you interview for, right? Not everybody brings that to the job.
So I've kind of come to the position myself when that interviews are useless and that it's only when you start working with the person, because everybody can interview badly or well, and it's not necessarily who you're getting. You agree or not?
So in the world of AI, where we actually don't know how we're going to be doing work tomorrow,
right.
I would agree to a certain extent that the interviews that we've used in the past are no longer relevant.
Huh.
I do think that there are things that we need to discuss in interviews to help set us up for the future.
Huh.
And so with employees coming in and, you know, asking them, have you worked in this technology? Have you ever done bookkeeping in this way? Have you worked with clients? Great. But guess what? Tomorrow we're going to be changing everything that we do because we got a new technology. So what you're looking for is different. You're looking for people who are able to adapt quickly to innovation.
Right.
You're looking for people who are going to be resourceful. You're looking for people who are cross-collaborative.
Right.
Those are the questions. And I bet you that an untrained interviewer would spend more time on, so tell me about your education and your past work experience and have you done it like this before,
right,
versus assessing how they're going to do it in the future when the entire world changes.
Right, right.
So it's just a different, you're looking for different things. And I don't know that an interview kind of is a bad idea. Obviously, it's the best tool that we have.
Right.
There's also personality assessments and there's psychometric assessments and all that. But it's what we're asking about that's most important.
So back to Ivan's question, which was, now when do we start and what do you do? What's the process? So where would you start with a practice like mine? I've got 8 employees.
You can engage her and pay her for the advice you're trying to get right now for free. So can we go on to another question?
I'm just trying to use it as a useful illustration to your point, to your question.
Okay. Okay. So when we're talking about smaller businesses, accountants who are old school and you know, look at HR from the perspective of what they went through when they were articling, probably at a larger firm, et cetera. I mean, I remember when I went, the way we were sold, because HR was directly involved in our initial 2-week training program, and the HR director was giving a lot of the initial courses, and he had an accounting background, so he taught some of the courses. Anyway, we were made to feel that HR is there for us. We have a problem, we can go to them. They're looking out for us. And it was very clear later on when there was an issue that I had to deal with that they are not there for us. They are there for the employer. So the tone that they set was misleading. It gave us a very false sense of security when thinking and dealing with HR. They became almost like our friends. We're buddies.
Meanwhile, they're using it against
you. They're using it against
it gets
us.
Back to, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, what do you see in that regard? And just to add to that, if you've got old school management,
yes,
and you can come in and you can pitch them and explain to them what this process is and what they have to do and their attitudes need to change. What do you see as far as the actual implementation and of that attitude?
Yeah,
do they actually do it, or do you find them just falling back on their old ways and it not working?
So I love data. And in organizations that are larger than 8 people, in organizations that are larger than 10,000 people, it's very, very clear that if you don't adapt, your partnership is at risk. Because we need to think about the fact that, you know, the generations coming up are the largest generations in the world. So not only are they your future employees, they're also your future clients. And so if we don't start thinking about adapting a little bit, we are going to have a really hard time finding people who want to work the way that we want to work, but we're also going to not be speaking the language of our clients. And that to us is something that we can understand. And so working in a very, very large firm in HR, I was able to demonstrate to them through data and through turnover data. So we know in traditional firms, just speaking about accounting, in traditional firms, it takes about 5 years to become a manager. And then once you become a manager, and if you are promoted to manager, you're generally on manager, you know, you're on partnership track. When I pulled data and I showed turnover, first thing that the partner said to me was, we don't have a turnover problem. Our turnover is better than anybody else's. They were right. Top line turnover was exceptional. They have a lot of people who've been there a lot of years. When I started peeling back the onion and showing them the data, our average employee tenure was under 2 years. So that means that nobody was being promoted to manager, that we were actually taking the best of the best out of school and we were showing them the ways that they could go and get a job elsewhere is basically what was happening. So one of two things needed to happen. Either A, we need to stop thinking like, well, when I was, you know, kind of going through it and it was hard work and you're going to learn the way that I learned, they're not going to learn the way you learned, period. So we either need to change that or we need to start assessing people sooner. So if this generation is looking for results sooner, what do we need to do in order to get them on a track sooner? And the way that it traditionally worked within a firm was like nobody really cared about you until you were promoted to manager because we weren't sure if you were going to make it. One in 100 was going to make it. We really need to shift that, you know, that way of thinking. Employees of today are looking for mentorship. They're looking for opportunities. And what I've done in some organizations where I've worked is we've actually taken compensation. So let's imagine that it would take someone 5 years to get to a certain compensation level. Instead of providing them with, you know, every year a 2% increase until they got there, why don't we think about different steps along the way? And by the way, compensation is only one way that we can reward and recognize employees. And so thinking about different milestones along the way so that there's more regular interaction, there's more regular rewards and recognition is going to help you to retain these employees for longer. But we need to remember the future is here, right? So what are our clients going to look like in 10 years from now? And do we have people that work for us who speak that language?
You mentioned in that illustration that employees stay less than 2 years. Is there a measure by, for example, for a profession? Like what's the average duration of an employee? What should a firm expect to get out of an employee?
Right. So unfortunately, 2 years is like this magic. Somebody came up with this number. And so employees will start looking around the 2 year mark if they are not feeling like they could advance their careers the way they want to. Something different though to think about, especially in a larger firm where there's more than 8 people, right. There's two ways to advance. You could be a technical expert where we don't really believe that you should have leadership responsibilities. And then there are people leaders. And being able to assess that fairly early is an opportunity not to overlook someone for their technical skills because they don't have the people skills. So like back in the 80s and 90s, if you wanted to get promoted, you needed to actually take on people leadership. And what I suggest to my clients is think about it as two tracks.
Right.
You've got some technical experts, continue to reward, recognize, and love on them.
Right.
Because they're some of your technical experts, they have historical knowledge, and they're super effective, and we can kind of leverage that.
Yeah.
And then identify people who should be leading teams.
Yeah.
You could be a technical expert who also leads a team, don't get me wrong,
but
it's really about not losing your technical experts.
Okay. So now for a smaller firm who's got the same issues just on a, you know, on a smaller basis, at what point do I say, okay, I need some HR help?
Well, I would
say— And how would I go about doing that?
Yeah, so the first thing I would say, Jonathan, is, are you doing the legislative trainings? Do you know what they
this
are?
This isn't about me, Kim.
No, it's not.
It's a hypothetical.
It's a hypothetical.
Hypothetical small business.
It's a hypothetical small business.
But it is for accountants.
Yes.
Right.
There are certain things that need to be done across the country and in the U.S. as well.
Yeah.
That are legislative requirements.
So I don't even know what those as an employer, practically speaking, I'm too busy with my day-to-day to even worry about that.
So there's this amazing PD course that's available on AJAG that really talks about HR 101 and employee compliance. I'm just saying that could be a great place to go. So, I mean, all joking aside, there are, in every single province, they are different. But let's say, for example, you know, when you get to a certain number of employees, and I think off the top of my head, like, please don't do this to me, but I think off the top, it's like there's like harassment training needs to be done. Mm. Health and safety training. There's employment equity that is that you're required to. You need to have a policy in place for, hours of work and overtime, et cetera, et cetera. And so there are a number of things that are required by the province where you are doing business.
And then there's professional training, right?
And then there's professional
training. Which is another different situation, right? So.
Well, and there's PD training, which is obviously related to your profession.
Right.
But then there's also leadership development or employee development, which is much more about skills-based and how helping people to find ways to advance their careers.
Mm. Okay, so she is making a fantastic case for just hiring independent contractors.
Right. Right. Well, no. Not really. So I don't know. Clearly, I don't know my need. So what do you do? What do you come along? What does an HR person do coming into a situation like that?
So the first thing that I would do is assess, what do you have in place? It sounds like nothing, but you have so much in place because we're not talking about you. We're talking about a hypothetical. Okay. But if you didn't have anything in place, the first thing that I would do is I would come back to you and I would say, here are the things that you need to have and here are the things you want to have. Mm. And it's really a menu because we don't want to, I'm not looking to go with a hammer onto, an ant, but it's also a great investment for the future. And so we would definitely talk about HR, not only from a compliance perspective, because compliance isn't all that sexy. And just because you have harassment training isn't going to help you attract your next best employee.
Right.
So I would come in and I would also recommend to you what some of the best employers are doing or what's going on in the competition or how it is that you can stay ahead. I'd also love to see what's your turnover. Right. So who do you have working for you? And if you were to say to me, well, I have people working for me who've been working for me for 20 years. The first question I'd say is, what's their retirement date?
Right.
What's your plan? Do you have succession planning in place? Mm-hmm. Oh, we have a number of employees. There's a bunch of them who aren't really performing. Great. Do you have a performance management program? Do your managers know how to put people through progressive discipline? Mm-hmm. So each company is at a different stage and each organization has very unique needs when it comes to the want to have. The must-haves are pretty clear.
Right. So do you go in full-time? Do you go in part? How does that work?
So I actually approach different organizations in different ways. I have some companies who are a little bit larger where I am on a retainer with them. Mm-hmm. They don't actually need someone who's at an executive level in HR all the time.
Right.
They might be going through an acquisition. They might be going through some kind of change management. They might be on a huge growth journey. They might be actually, looking to go into a new industry or whatever it is that their challenge is, and they need executive level HR support, but they don't need it every single day.
Right.
So that could be a retainer versus, hey, Kim, can you get us up to compliance and help us understand what it is that we need to do in the next couple of years in order to address the fact that we don't have succession plans in place and a bunch of our people are retiring? Could be a project.
Right, right. So back to Ivan's question, which is, in his experience when he was starting in your training at your firm and you thought HR were your friends, how does an employer strike that balance between, or how do you, Kim, build confidence in employees that they're not overpromised? Because at the end of the day, in my office, everybody knows I'm the one paying the bill. So how do you care about that? How do you deal with that?
Yeah. So my job is to help people perform. And my job is to help people have the greatest employee experience that they possibly can. That's my job. But the reason I do that job is because it's good for the company. To me, that's very clear. So if you're coming to me because you have a challenge with your employment situation and you're a high-value employee, obviously I want to help to address that.
Right.
I want to help you to perform your best every single day. I want you to feel as comfortable and as connected as you can. I want you to feel like you can bring your whole self to work every single day. Those are all ways to help you to accelerate your performance. And at the end of the day, you're right, Jonathan, like, you pay my bill.
Right.
And so my job is to help you to engage your employees in a way that you're getting the very best out of them. But the way that we get the best out of employees is by treating them with respect and helping them to perform and finding the right balance and helping employees to who are really aligned to our culture and our values to come and work with us.
And are you going to train me in the process? Am I going to come out of this realizing, oh, I've got some real deficiencies here I need to work on? How does that, I'm just curious in terms of HR, are people always coming to you? Are employees always coming to you? Or are you going to say to me, okay, when you're dealing with Fred or Sally or Helen, here's what I'd say or wouldn't say. How does this work?
So
both?
Well, I prefer employees to go back to their managers, but I never want to be the person where an employee calls me and I say, well, go back to your manager.
Mm.
So if an employee calls me, obviously I'm going to listen and I'm going to provide them with some advice. But at the end of the day, I always joke about it, but I don't want to be the hero. Mm. I want you to be the hero.
Mm.
And so I do a lot of coaching with CEOs and founders. I do a lot of coaching with executives, helping them to deal with the problems. Because at the end of the day, if I'm the hero and I'm actually not even there on a full-time basis, we've lost.
Right.
What I'm trying to help is not only overcome the issue, but help reestablish the connection.
Right. What about working virtually now? How do you build relationships when everybody's working virtually? We don't have an office. Everybody works from their home. So what we've tried to do is just every quarter get together, go out for lunch. But how do you, in an HR function, then come into that environment? What's been your experience?
So I think that there is nothing that can replicate the magic of the in-person experience.
Right.
That does not mean that I don't believe in virtual working. It means that bringing people together when and if you can is very important. But what's important is not just bringing them together for the sake of bringing them together. It's about what you do when you're together.
Hmm.
So when I think about what's really important and how it is we engage employees regardless of where they live or work, I think about connection.
Hmm.
And I think about connection in three ways. So first of all, how do employees connect with each other?
Hmm.
Having a best friend at work is really important. And studies have shown that they're 17% more likely to stay at an employer if you have a best friend. So helping employees connect with each other, check. That's one thing.
Hmm.
Helping them to connect to the vision, mission, values, the purpose of the organization. I work here because I believe in what you're doing is actually going to get you more connection with employees than anything you pay them or any ways that you recognize them. When somebody comes to work for you because they want to help you achieve as a company what you've set out to achieve, that's a level of connection that you can't buy.
Mm. Mm.
And then the third way that I connect employees, regardless of where it is that they're working, is through their performance. Mm. Do I understand how my job as an entry-level bookkeeper relates to the overall performance of the organization?
Mm.
Do I know what my role is and why it's important to the company? And even though my CEO may not know me by name, they value what I do.
Yeah.
And I do that in larger organizations through, you know, putting together a planning process, right? So understanding what the overall goals are of the organization and helping everybody's goals link directly to those goals.
Mm.
So if you've got employees who connect to each other, employees who feel very, very passionate about the purpose of why it is that you're in business, and they understand why their work is important, I would say that's what's going to get you that level of connection that you can't buy. Now, again, younger employees, will be more successful if they have in-person mentoring.
You're telling me I need to get a physical location again, right?
I'm saying that at the end of the day, if you are hiring very junior people, remember what made you the most exceptional accountant that you are. Right. You worked in an environment, exactly, Ivan was talking about it. You know, you worked in an environment where you had day-to-day mentorship. And I'm not saying it needs to be day-to-day, but they do need mentorship, you know, and that's why while we joked about, you know,
the fact that— You can still do that virtually though, right?
You can do that virtually. It's just not the same. For employees, it's just not the same.
I see. Okay.
And there is something to be said about the way that firms have been doing things for 100 plus years.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying—
It's not the same experience.
Not the same experience.
I agree.
Now, we don't need to replicate what the firm's been doing for 100 plus years. I think that there's something in the middle.
And then just in terms of tools, you know, I'm recognizing I don't have a good HR function in my firm. So what tools do I need? What tools do you need if you're going to come in? And there must be like a gazillion. But
there's a gazillion. I would say most organizations are managing, very small, are managing on spreadsheets. That's fine. I mean, really, it's fine. However, going back to compliance, there are certain pieces of paper that you need to have.
Right.
There are certain documents that you need
paper.
To keep.
I don't have paper.
And the paper can be, you know, it can actually be electronic.
Right.
But there are, you know, employee agreements or if there's any discipline on file, where do you keep that? And so the first thing that organizations will generally implement is an HRIS system, human resources information system. So an HRIS. That's usually the first. Then what's your payroll?
Interested. Trying to look interested.
Sorry. She's convinced me I can't hire anybody. So I'm just here to fill the seat.
Let's keep our conversation going.
So some other things to think about is an applicant tracking system or an ATS. When you're in a recruitment process and you're interviewing a bunch of candidates or you've put an ad up and you received 500 candidates, there's no way you're going through all 500.
Yeah.
But in the future, you may want to go back. So I would say an ATS is very similar to almost like, you know, it's the Salesforce for recruitment.
Right.
And then what's your payroll system? And does your payroll—
I was wondering about that. Like if somebody's using a Ceridium or an ADP, there must be tools they have for tracking that type of thing. No?
Yes. A Ceridian has a human resources information system. So does ADP. And they also connect into a bunch of the other HR systems. Then you've got performance management systems. And then you've got employee engagement systems. And people are doing, you know, employee engagement surveys. And so there's a million systems out there. What's really important is you don't need to overbuy systems. You need to think about what do you need for today? What are you going to need for tomorrow and maybe the year after?
And I assume you're going to tell somebody this is what I need to put in place.
I'm going to make recommendations.
Right.
We're going to talk about what I would do if we stayed this size today. And we're going to talk about what it is that your plans are for the future and how it is that we could get ahead of that.
So I'm sure everybody loves the horror stories, right? So give us a few examples of small businesses, because I think, again, most people watching this will, you know, will be in that arena, and companies that either didn't follow your recommendations or got themselves into trouble before they came to you. So what are some of the things that firms have done and the implications of that too.
Oh my. This is my book, right? This is the title of my book. So I'll give you an example. I'll give you two examples. One of them is pretty horrible. So there was a CEO and an employee who happened to be in HR, but it was an employee and they became quite friendly with each other. Professional colleagues. HR is often kind of the voice of reason or the consigliere, right? Like in the ear of the CEO. And the CEO was going through a particularly difficult time in their life and was really vulnerable and interpreted the repartee between himself and the HR person as friendship.
Right.
No, friendship. was sending text messages on the weekends, was sending photos from vacations, was sending photos of, you know, things that made him think of her while he was on vacation. Let's fast forward. They're really good friends. They go out for drinks together. They have great conversations. She knows everything about, you know, his vulnerabilities as a CEO. He really trusts her. And then he has to fire her for a number of different reasons. You know, it was a performance-based decision. All of the right things were done. We negotiate the exit. And this is like, I just came into this firm. Negotiate the exit, and then she calls me afterwards, and she's got receipts. She's got the text messages. She has emails. She's got dates and times where things were happening on weekends, nights, vacation photos of the CEO in a bathing suit, which you know, if it was my friend, there's nothing inappropriate about me sending a picture of myself on a beach on vacation.
Yeah.
But in a workplace environment, that could very easily be construed as sexual harassment.
Right.
And so the truth is it was entirely innocent, and it really was, you know, what he thought, a friendship.
Yeah.
It's a friendship until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And that cost a whole bunch of money to make sure that that harassment suit went away, a lot more than what the severance would have cost. So, you know, organizations like to talk about themselves as families or friends.
Yeah.
We're not friends, and we aren't family, because families don't have to fire each other normally. That being said, you know, as a CEO or as a leader of people, you're held to a much higher standard.
Yeah.
And so even though you think that you're friends, and even though you may go out for drinks on an occasion, this person is an employee of yours.
Yeah.
And when and if it ever hit the wall, you could be implicated.
Yeah.
And so we always need to behave in a manner that is appropriate and befitting our role.
Think about it in that context.
Always think about it.
So easy not to.
Another situation that I'll give, which is much more related to a firm situation, was there was a termination decision made on a weekend. Well, when you make a termination decision on a weekend, on a long weekend, for a pretty young person, there's very few resources available to them. And it ended in a suicide.
Wow. Wow.
And so I never do terminations on the, you know, before a weekend.
Yeah.
When it's coming up on the holiday season,
there's
no terminations in December. And again, this is really conservative.
Yeah.
And should somebody do something that really needs to be terminated immediately, then obviously, you know, if it's a for-cause termination, you're not going to hold off on it.
Yeah.
But when it is a not-for-cause termination because somebody is performing poorly, it's incumbent upon us as organizations to actually think about the consequences of the decisions that we make on people's lives.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And that's not because it's a legal requirement. That's because it's a moral requirement.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I've got so many more.
I have one. A couple of years ago, made a decision that somebody that I was working with wasn't a good fit. Went about it the right way, contacted a lawyer, and worked through, all right, what do I need to do here, and so on. I was away at the time, traveling, and the law firm sent the letter that I was going to give to the person to my email address, which is completely open to this person. So I'm on the other side of the world. At 4 o'clock in the morning, my phone goes off, and this person says to me, I think we need to talk. I had no idea what had happened. And so it was just the worst situation. I was powerless to do anything. Mm-hmm. I called the partner at the law firm and said, do you know what's happened? Because I have a separate private confidential email and all of that stuff, and that they hadn't followed that protocol. It was not a pretty sight, and it wasn't the way I wanted to deal with the person.
No.
Right?
80% of what I do, I'd prefer to talk about people who are performing, and I'd prefer to be talking about how it is that we help them to bring their best to work. But unfortunately, it's those situations that could ruin your reputation in a moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can do whatever it is that you want to do to advertise your firm and to put out a brand into the marketplace. It takes one situation.
To undo it all.
To undo it all.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the how we do things is as important as the what, and your termination might have been 100%, you know, correct, and you did everything right up until that point. Yeah. But as we exit an employee, and one of the pieces of advice that I often give to CEOs or to leaders is, you're not going to get sued because you have a bad personality. Stick to the script.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you read my words when you're in that difficult conversation.
Right.
You're not going to get sued because you read these words because you didn't come off with a great personality.
Right.
You will, however, get sued if you go off script and you start saying things that you shouldn't say.
Right.
So for situations where you don't do it very often.
Yeah. Stick to script.
Hopefully. Stick to script. Yeah. Get advice. Yeah. I love that you spoke to a lawyer.
Yeah.
Probably charged you twice as much as an HR consultant would have charged you.
Maybe.
But that being said,
no, actually, he discounted it because of the way it turned out. So, anyway,
was it worth it?
Was it worth it?
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed episode number 11. We invite you back to upcoming ones, which will be dealing with equally interesting topics. Thank you, Kim, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And so, we remind you to sign up for our newsletter and also visit ajag.ca, where you will see all of our courses, including all of those that Kim has been involved in. Thank you for doing that, Kim. And now we're into PD season. So check out all of our course offerings as if you haven't been doing your PD so far, the clock is ticking now. So check out, we've got a great roster of courses you'll find. You'll find them all on our website on the course calendar. So thanks, everyone. We look forward to seeing you inside of our next podcast. Take care now.